Chapter 20. He was deep in the perusal of the 29th volume of Pusey's Library of the Fathers, a set of books which he had purchased of a second-hand dealer at a price that seemed to him to be one of miraculous cheapness for that invaluable work. He fancied he heard something rattle lightly against his window, then he heard it again. Certainly somebody had thrown gravel. He rose and gently lifted the sash. Jude. From below, Sue. Yes, it is. Can I come up without being seen? Oh, yes. Then don't come down. Shut the window. Jude waited, knowing that she could enter easily enough, the front door being opened merely by a knob which anybody could turn, as in most old country towns. He palpitated at the thought that she had fled to him in her trouble as he had fled to her in his. What counterparts they were. He unlatched the door of his room, heard a stealthy rustle on the dark stairs, and in a moment she appeared in the light of his lamp. He went up to seize her hand, and found she was clammy as a marine deity, and that her clothes clung to her like the robes upon the figures in the Parthenon frieze. I'm so cold, she said through her chattering teeth. Can I come by your fire, Jude? She crossed to his little grate and very little fire, but as the water dripped from her as she moved, the idea of drying herself was absurd. Whatever have you done, darling, he asked, with alarm, the tender epithet slipping out unawares. Walked through the largest river in the county, that's what I've done. They locked me up for being out with you, and it seemed so unjust that I couldn't bear it, so I got out of the window and escaped across the stream. S. He had begun the explanation in her usual slightly independent tones, but before S. He had finished the thin pink lips trembled, and she could hardly refrain from crying. Dear Sue, he said, you must take off all your things, and let me see you must borrow some from the landlady. I'll ask her. No, no, don't let her know, for God's sake. We are so near the school that they'll come after me. Then you must put on mine. You don't mind? Oh no. My Sunday suit, you know. It is close here. In fact, everything was close and handy in Jude's single chamber, because there was not room for it to be otherwise. He opened a drawer, took out his best dark suit, and giving the garments a shake, said, now, how long shall I give you? 10 minutes. Jude left the room, and went into the street, where he walked up and down. A clock struck 7:30, and he returned. Sitting in his only armchair he saw a slim and fragile being masquerading as himself on a Sunday, so pathetic in her defenselessness, that his heart felt big with the sense of it. On two other chairs before the fire were her wet garments. She blushed as he sat down beside her, but only for a moment. I suppose, Jude, it is odd that you should see me like this, and all my things hanging there? Yet what nonsense! They are only a woman's clothes, sexless cloth and linen. I wish I didn't feel so ill and sick. Will you dry my clothes now? Please do, Jude, and I'll get a lodging by and by. It is not late yet. No, you shan't, if you are ill. You must stay here. Dear, dear Sue, what can I get for you? I don't know. I can't help shivering. I wish I could get warm. Jude put on her his greatcoat in addition, and then ran out to the nearest public house, whence he returned with a little bottle in his hand. Here's 6 of best brandy, he said. How you drink it, dear, all of it. I can't out of the bottle, can I? Jude fetched the glass from the dressing table, and administered the spirit in some water. She gasped a little, but gulped it down, and lay back in the armchair. She then began to relate circumstantially her experiences since they had parted, but in the middle of her story her voice faltered, her head nodded, and she ceased. She was in a sound sleep. Jude, dying of anxiety lest she should have caught a chill which might permanently injure her, was glad to hear the regular breathing. He softly went nearer to her, and observed that a warm flush now rose her hitherto blue cheeks, and felt that her hanging ached, and was no longer cold. Then he stood with his back to the fire regarding her, and saw in her almost a divinity. IV. Jude's reverie was interrupted by the creak of footsteps ascending the stairs. He whisked Sue's clothing from the chair where it was drying, thrust it under the bed, and sat down to his book. Somebody knocked and opened the door immediately. It was the landlady. "Oh, I didn't know whether you was in or not, Mr. Folly. I wanted to know if you would require supper. I see you've a young gentleman."
"Yes, ma'am. But I think I won't come down tonight. Will you bring supper up on a tray, and I'll have a cup of tea as well."
It was Jude's custom to go downstairs to the kitchen and eat his meals with the family to save trouble. His landlady brought up the supper, however, on this occasion, and he took it from her at the door. When as he had descended, he set the teapot on the hob and drew out Sue's clothes anew, but they were far from dry. A thick woolen gown, he found, held a deal of water. So he hung them up again, and enlarged his fire and mused as the steam from the garments went up the chimney. Suddenly she said, "Jude."
"Yes."
"All right. How do you feel now?"
"Better."
"Quite well."
"Why, I fell asleep, didn't I? What time is it?"
"Not late, surely?"
"It is past 10.
"Is it really? What shall I do?"
she said, starting up.
"Stay where you are."
"Yes, that's what I want to do. But I don't know what they would say."
"And what will you do?"
"I am going to sit here by the fire all night and read. Tomorrow is Sunday, and I haven't to go out anywhere. Perhaps you will be saved a severe illness by resting there. Don't be frightened."
"I'm all right. Look here, what I have got for you. Some supper."
When as he had sat upright, she breathed plaintively and said, "I do feel rather weak still. Elle thought I was well, and I ought not to be here, ought I?" But the supper fortified her somewhat, and when as he had had some tea and had lain back again, she was bright and cheerful. The tea must have been green, or too long drawn, for she seemed preternaturally wakeful afterwards, though Jude, who had not taken any, began to feel heavy, till her conversation fixed his attention. "You called me a creature of civilization, or something, didn't you?" she said, breaking a silence. "Tea was very odd, you should have done that."
"Why?"
"Well, because it is provokingly wrong. I am a sort of negation of it."
"You are very philosophical. A negation is profound talking."
"Is it?
Do I strike you as being learned?"
she asked, with a touch of raillery.
"No, not learned. Only you don't talk quite like a girl."
"Well, a girl who has had no advantages."
"I have had advantages.
I don't know Latin and Greek, though I know the grammars of those tongues. But I know most of the Greek and Latin classics through translations, and other books too. I read Lempriere, Catullus, Martial, Juvenal, Lucian, Beaumont, and Fletcher, Boccaccio, Scarron, de Brantome, Sterne, Defoe, Smollett, Fielding, Shakespeare, the Bible, and other such, and found that all interest in the unwholesome part of those books ended with its mystery."
"You have read more than I," he said with a sigh. "How came you to read some of those queer ones?"
"Well," she said thoughtfully, "it was by accident. My life has been entirely shaped by what people call a peculiarity in me. I have no fear of men, as such, nor of their books. I have mixed with them, one or two of them particularly, almost as one of their own sex. I mean, I have not felt about them as most women are taught to feel, to be on their guard against attacks on their virtue. For no average man, no man short of a sensual savage, will molest a woman by day or night, at home or abroad, unless she invites him. Until she says by a look, 'Come on,' he is always afraid to, and if you never say it, or look it, he never comes. However, what I was going to say is that when I was 18 I formed a friendly intimacy with an undergraduate at Christminster, and he taught me a great deal, and lent me books which I should never have got hold of otherwise."
"Is your friendship broken off?"
"Oh yes. He died, poor fellow, 2 or 3 years after he had taken his degree and left Christminster."
"You saw a good deal of him, I suppose?"
"Yes. We used to go about together on walking tours, reading tours, and things of that sort, like two men almost. He asked me to live with him, and I agreed to by letter. But when I joined him in London, I found he meant a different thing from what I meant. He wanted me to be his mistress, in fact, but I wasn't in love with him, and on my saying I should go away, if he didn't agree to my plan, he did so. We shared a sitting room for 15 months, and he became a leader writer for one of the great London dailies, till he was taken ill, and had to go abroad. He said I was breaking his heart by holding out against him so long at such close quarters. He could never have believed it of woman. I might play that game once too often, he said. He came home merely to die. His death caused a terrible remorse in me for my cruelty, though I hope he died of consumption, and not of me entirely. L went down to Sandburn to his funeral, and was his only mourner. He left me a little money, because I broke his heart, I suppose. That's how men are so much better than women. Good heavens! What did you do then? Ah, now you are angry with me, she said, a contralto note of tragedy coming suddenly into her silvery voice. Wouldn't have told you, if I had known. No, I am not. Tell me all. Well, I invested his money, poor fellow, in a bubble scheme, and lost it. I lived about London by myself for some time, and then I returned to Christminster, as my father, who was also in London, and had started as an art metal worker near Long Acre, wouldn't have me back, and I got that occupation in the artist shop where you found me. I said you didn't know how bad I was. Jude looked round upon the armchair and its occupant, as if to read more carefully the creature he had given shelter to. His voice trembled as he said, "Oh, ever you have lived, Sue, I believe you are as innocent as you are unconventional. I am not particularly innocent, as you see, now that I have twitched the rope from that Langley figure your fancy draped," said she, with an ostensible sneer, though he could hear that she was brimming with tears. "But I have never yielded myself to any lover, if that's what you mean. I have remained as I began. I quite believe you. But some women would not have remained as they began. Perhaps not. Better women would not. People say I must be cold-natured sexless on account of it. But I won't have it. Some of the most passionately erotic poets have been the most self-contained in their daily lives. Have you told Mr. Phillotson about this university scholar friend? Yes, long ago. I have never made any secret of it to anybody. What did he say? He did not pass any criticism, only said I was everything to him, whatever I did, and things like that." Jude felt much depressed. She seemed to get further and further away from him with her strange ways and curious unconsciousness of gender. "Aren't you really vexed with me, dear Jude?" she suddenly asked, in a voice of such extraordinary tenderness that it hardly seemed to come from the same woman who had just told her story so lightly. "I would rather offend anybody in the world than you, I think. I don't know whether I am vexed or not. I know I care very much about you. I care as much for you as for anybody I ever met. You don't care more. There, I ought not to say that. Don't answer it." There was another long silence. He felt that she was treating him cruelly, though he could not quite say in what way. Her very helplessness seemed to make her so much stronger than he. "I am awfully ignorant on general matters, although I have worked so hard," he said, "to turn the subject. I'm absorbed in theology, you know." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.